Afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio, having returned from my travels to, among other places, Key West, Florida, and at least one place to which I had no intent of traveling, and another place where my bag had no intent of traveling. All will be made clear as we get farther into the broadcast. I came into the Gene Bosch studio this afternoon, and there was a brown envelope addressed to Captain Joe sitting on the table in the studio. I opened it up, and therein were some pieces of mail correspondence from Captain Joe's people, who had not only written and addressed envelopes, as I had requested that you do, to the ever-lovely Kate, but who had also enclosed and included a donation to help keep From the Captain's Chair always up and rolling. So my greetings today go out to all of you. I do not know whether Old Man Winter has been completely vanquished, but what I do know is that all of Captain Joe's people answered the call and came through. And the evidence of that are the wonderful messages and cards and letters and donations that help us keep the voice of Vashon broadcasting on 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, of which Stockholm is the capital. My greetings then go out to all of Captain Joe's people, and in particular those who heard the call to action, read the op order, the operations order, said the captain is asking for our help, and who are we to say him nay? And you certainly did not do that. You did exactly what I asked you to do. The binnacle list today, I walked in also along with that lovely brown paper envelope that was sitting on the table, was the specter of the counselor wearing a mask. And I asked, why, counselor, are you wearing that mask? Should you be placed on the binnacle list? And he said, oh, no, Captain, don't do that. I just have a little cough that I chose not to spread around, for which I am enormously grateful. My own binnacle list entry this week will be included in my commentary about my trip to Key West, because there were a couple of things that happened, and all of them were challenges met, overcome, conquered. We never give up the ship. So I'll get to that in a few minutes if I have time. But the counselor situation, along with all of Captain Joe's people who are doing better as the week goes by, I'm counting on that. I'm counting on you following the instructions of your medical practitioners so that you will leave the binnacle list and return to full duty. My magazine this week is that ever much loved and ever popular with your Captain the Week, which comes from London. And the article is one of New Year's good news. And that has to do with the reopening of Notre Dame in Paris. I've talked before about my love affair with the city of Paris. It started when I was an 18-year-old cadet. And I fell in love with a 90-year-old French actress. There's a line for you, which is a story for another time. It'd be enough to say that this was a relationship which was not consummated in the traditional sense, but was one which formed my feelings about the City of Light. Later on, I took Mary R. to Paris several times, and one of the things that we did one year was to go to Notre Dame. Now, the article in The Week talks about its reopening, and it calls it a cathedral, but a cathedral, by definition, in Roman Catholic practice, is the seat of a bishop. And in the case of Paris, the seat of the Cardinal Archbishop of Paris is actually Sacré-Cœur up on the hill in Montmartre. Notre Dame is an ancient church, and at one time it was the cathedral, the seat of the chair of the Bishop of Paris. But today it is a church. It probably also has the basilica rank. Of that I'm not certain. But, of course, just over 5 years ago, it burned. When that happened, I talked about it, and I talked about my sadness that that happened. And the little article that is in The Week for this week, it's actually not for this week. The Week comes to me a couple of weeks late because it comes by way of Sweden. Not that the Swedes don't have a very efficient postal service. They do. And costs less than ours, which it does. So anyway, here is a truncated version of the little article in the piece, and I'm giving you this so that if you go to Paris, and I urge you to do it if you have never been in your lifetime, this is one of those things that you should do to fill out the experiences of your life. And for me, it started when I was 18. So here's a truncated version of that article. It says, in the section in The Week called Europe at a Glance, it says, 5.5 years after it was gutted by a devastating fire, Notre Dame Cathedral, it is calling itself in this article a cathedral. I think it is not really that anymore. Officially reopened last week. The ceremony was attended by 1,500 dignitaries, including the Prince of Wales and 50 heads of state. The service was led by the Archbishop of Paris, who knocked three times on the great doors before entering with a crozier carved from one of its ancient charred beams. President Macron said in a speech thanking all involved in the rebuilding, "We have rediscovered what great nations can do. Achieve the impossible." Well, clearly it wasn't impossible because they've achieved it. The £700 million restoration, which was completed on time and on budget. I make a parenthetical insertion here that I just barely completed the Shackleton Memorial Library on time and on budget. Involved some 2,000 workers, many of them traditional artisans' workshops. Around 2,000 oak trees were donated by forests across France. New beams were hand-hewn using 60 axes forged to detailed specifications by a blacksmith in Alsace. I just love it when we rebuild something using the techniques and the tools that were used when it was originally built, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. The cathedral's organ, which has 8,000 pipes, was entirely dismantled, cleaned, and rebuilt. and centuries of grime were removed from the building's ancient stones, leaving the interior as pale and gleaming as it would have been in the Middle Ages. Oh, my dear ones all, go and see it. Go and see it while you can travel. I hope to make one more trip to Paris and to go and see Notre Dame. The other thing in this week, in the week for this week, which is several weeks late, is the property that we're going to buy. You know that we go into the best properties on the market section in the week. And the headline for this week is Houses in Need of Renovation or Modernization. And they really are not blowing smoke up anybody's stern tube on that one. So here's the one that I have picked. It is in Warwickshire. The title of the property is The Thatched Cottage, and the photograph of it shows indeed that it has a thatched roof. The underside of a thatched roof, by the way, is exactly what you see on the outside of a thatched roof. And you can hear all of the little animals scurrying around in there. I have a friend in Cambridge who lived in a house that had a thatched roof. A charming 17th century cottage in a conservation area. There's a lookout right there. In a conservation area. Those are areas where you are severely constrained as to what you can do. We have them in this country as well. Charleston, South Carolina has one. Savannah, Georgia has another. This one has four bedrooms, two baths, sort of baths, I'll bet, a kitchen, and two receptions. You remember, those are what we call living rooms. And the price is £550,000 sterling. And should I decide to move back to the United Kingdom, I would take a look at the thatched cottage in Warwickshire, even though it's not in Cambridgeshire, which is where I would want to live. A potpourri of icebreaker pieces this afternoon. First of all, the Coast Guard cutter Storrs, formerly the oil rig resupply ship Eivik, now been numbered hull number WAGB-21, and is carrying the proud Storrs, the name Storrs. When I look at this ship, I have many serious reservations. The commandant has said, and I'm quoting from her, "The Coast Guard is thrilled to acquire this icebreaker," unquote. Well, Madam Commandant, I am not thrilled to acquire this ship. She's not an icebreaker. She has a flat stern. She has very little freeboard aft. No prudent icebreaking captain is going to back her down in any kind of heavy ice. Or if he does, he's going to acquire a huge deck load back there. Furthermore, she has a helicopter pad forward. This is in keeping with merchant ship and especially oil rig practice. It is not in keeping with our practice. And I say before, I will say it again. I hope that whoever is given her to command and to love will also be a highly skilled master mariner. And not only a highly skilled master mariner at basic seagoing, because I would not want to ride out a Pacific typhoon in her. I would not want to ride out any of the bad weather that comes up in the Bering Strait or up around Point Barrow. And should she encounter any of that weather, I do not see how she cannot have that flight deck wiped off. But be that as it may, I am hopeful that whoever is assigned to be her captain, to love both her crew and the ship herself, I suspect that she's going to be a hard ship to love. But, Madam Commandant, this captain is not thrilled to acquire this non-icebreaker. What I would really be thrilled is if we had followed the recommendation that I made to the commandant, that great gentleman in the service, Admiral Jim Gracey, when I served him as the ice boss in the late 1980s. And I said at that time, Admiral, now is the time for us not only to build the ship that we now know as Healy, but also the recommendations that I and now Captain Professor Dr. Lawson Brigham have made to you in a final report of my activities before I become an honored retiree, is that now is the time for us to begin the construction, the planning and the construction, the funding of a replacement icebreaker fleet. Admiral Gracey said, Captain Joe, very soon I am retiring. Very soon you are retiring. I will pass this on to my relief, and I know that you will pass it on to yours. And then a great wasteland ensued. And here we are decades later. We have picked the wrong yard to build these ships. We have picked a operating philosophy which seems to me to be that old French expression, laissez-faire. And I lust in my black captain's heart. My sea bag is packed. Madam Commandant, if you would like me to come back on active duty, I will be happy to come back and see what I can do to move this whole thing along. We're talking now about 2030 before we even get a whiff of sea trials of the first ship in the class. I do think, without having yet taken a look at the drawings or inspected the yard, that with a little bit of enthusiastic pressure in the right places at the right time and against the right people, that we could do better than what we're doing. In any case, there you have it. And so the other thing that I have to say about icebreakers is in the Russian fleet. A few days ago, a piece came to my attention which showed an icebreaker built for the Russian Navy rather than for the organization that operates the nuclear icebreakers. The nuclear-powered icebreakers are not naval vessels. They are used by the authority that operates the Northern Sea Route. But the Russian Navy has built a class of which I've seen a photograph of one. Very heavily armed and with a classical icebreaker hull. This looks to me like a very capable and competent ship and a true and full icebreaker. And armed not only with conventional or traditional weapons as in cannon forward, but also missiles. And clearly, it is intended that she be an Arctic patrol vessel because she would not be deployed to the Antarctic. You can see photographs of her. Go to, you'd have to type in maybe G Captain. But you can find photographs of her. Her hull number is 400-400, painted dramatically on the side, and they're painted gray, not the colorful paint scheme that the nuclear-powered icebreakers have. All of this is important because they are indicators that the Russian Bear is going to, at some time and at some picking and choosing time, the claws are going to come out. And we, and Canada, together, we may be able to muster something that can present some sort of presence, but nothing like what the Russians can do this very day. And we have done this, as we often do, we have done this to ourselves. I wish that it were not so. We are all the way up today to All Coast. All Coasts are messages that go out to all Coast Guard people, and I get all of the All Coasts. We're already up to number 7. Today is the 7th of January, and we're up to All Coast 7. All Coast 7 says, is announcing the search for a person to occupy the Swearingen Award for Outstanding Mentorship in Human Performance Technology. What the hell does all that mean? That has nothing to do with seagoing. That has nothing to do with being a good captain. Nothing to do with being an XO that serves as captain, as all of mine did. Has nothing to do with getting a crew ready to take on the sea at its worst, which is the world in which we live, the world in which the Coast Guard lives, the world in which I lived, off, on and on and on. 6 different ships. And instead, I'm getting an all kiss that says, you're supposed to circularize amongst your crew to find somebody who is an outstanding mentor for human performance technology. Madam Commandant, not in my ships, not in my commands. But all of my young officers will know how to handle the ship because I will have taught them. They will know how to navigate using traditional ways as well as modern ways because I will have taught them. And all of those things will happen. And I will have a crew that is officered and manned and chiefed by people who want to go to sea and by people who have been trained to deal with the sea at its absolute worst, because it is the same sea today as it was at the time of the creation. Whatever creation story is the one that you accept. Over the years, in the last 5 years, we've had some evidences, in particular in our sister service, the United States Navy, which were heartbreaking to me. And I communicated that heartbreak to all of you. Beautiful ships with crews that deserve better. Destroyers in the R.A. Burke class. Very complicated ships. And manned by young sailors who deserved the best. And they often did not get that. We always try, all of us in command, always try, or we should try, to be the best that we possibly can. A crew does not want to belong to a ship that is slovenly, cannot get herself alongside without tugs. All of these things are part of the basic training that we should be providing for all of our people. So now let me tell you a little bit about my trip. I had decided that I was going to go to Stockholm for New Year's to be with my Swedish family. And then we did a little bit of figuring out, and my Swedish family said, we'd like to go someplace where it's warm. And I said, then let's go to Florida. And I said, let's go to Key West, because that's where my Ingham is, on whom all blessings flow. That's where my Ingham is, and I will meet you there. So this was my first trip with the external plumbing, which is part of my treatment plan. We talked a little bit about that, and we'll probably talk some more. And so I made all of the bookings, and I got myself to Miami, and I rented a car from Harry Hertz and headed south to Key West. The time together in Key West was absolutely perfect. And one of the things that we did was that I took my family to Ingham, and Bill Verge, who is the head of the Ingham as a museum, had all of his keys with him. I no longer have my keys for that ship. And we went into spaces that were not part of the tour. Bill is 88, and he is looking for a relief. Anybody out there who might be interested, get in touch with Bill Verge at the Ingham Museum in Key West, Florida. But we had a wonderful day together, and we went into the spaces and compartments that were of great memory to me, because I served that ship both as XO and then as captain for just over 2 years. And it was a wonderful experience to take my family to her. I did not realize how high the captain's chair was. And by this time, the external plumbing arrangements were beginning to chafe and irritate and annoy the captain. And so I chose not to climb up into the chair. But I did go out onto the starboard bridge wing, which was the site of over 60 underway replenishments, where either I was conning myself or I was training young officers to do it. It was a glorious time. And then it came time to head home. And I got on to, and I drove back to Miami International Airport, airline code MIA, turned in my motor car, got on this airplane that was headed for Houston. And halfway between MIA and IAH, which is the airline code for Houston, a coupling on the external plumbing system failed and my starboard shoe filled up. And I now have a white sock on the port side and a yellow sock on the starboard side. There are some interesting manipulations that go on when you are faced with this particular problem. For me, semper paratus, I had a spare day tank in my flight bag, and I worked my way forward to the forward head because I was flying in the front end of the airplane. Got into the head, forward head, and took more than my fair share of time and changed out the day tank. That particular United flight now has a rejected day tank in one of its rubbish bags. All of this to tell you that if you ever are going to do this, and I urge you not to pass on travel just because you have this sort of arrangement as part of your life, but that you be ready for a number of unexpected but enthusiastic things happening. So I was able to make necessary repairs and get back to my seat. I found that all of the leakage had deposited itself either in my starboard shoe or onto my now yellow sock or onto the starboard leg of my trousers and not in the seat or, thank God, not in the seat of my lovely seatmate. All turned out to be all right. But we were really late because the traffic was bad. And then in the meantime, United decided to send my bag to Denver, airline code DEN. Now, I never intended to go to Denver. I did not go to Denver, and my bag has still not showed up. Promises are high that it will appear today. So that's my report on my trip. There's a lot more to it, and maybe I'll get to some of it next week. But I tell you these things because I want to make sure and encourage everybody who is thinking, the logistics are more than I want to deal with. But when you make one of these trips and you do it for the right reasons with the right people and going to the right place, it's worth doing the extra time and energy, doing the preventive maintenance, and then when necessary, the corrective maintenance. So we have all far too quickly, at least for your captain, come to the end of our time together this week. Next week, I will be broadcasting again from the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio. I never, ever say goodbye. Always say until we meet again. And that's what I'm saying today, until we meet again. And this is, as always, your Captain Joe, up in the captain's chair. And I remain maybe just a little bit less agile or less movable than I was before, but we're getting there on station and watching properly.